It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll talk to an investigative reporter about what Wisconsin agencies received military gear as part of a federal program.
First, public health efforts around the country have aimed to lower teen pregnancy rates. While those numbers have been in decline nationally, hitting a record low in 2013, one state's efforts have seen some dramatic results.
According to a recent paper, Colorado cut its teen birth rates by 40% over the last 4 years, bringing national and international coverage to the state's teen pregnancy efforts and raising the question of whether the program could and should be used in other states.
Greta Klingler is with us now. She's the family planning supervisor at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Greta, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Well, the program that's got a lot of credit for lowering teen pregnancy is an effort to provide free and low-cost birth control to teens. Tell us about how it works.
About 6 years ago, we received some additional private funding to supplement what we were already doing in our state family planning program with state and federal funds. The funding we received was specifically to provide long-acting reversible contraceptives like IUDs and implants at no or low cost to all people across Colorado who were interested in receiving these. And this really bolstered the efforts that were already in place, as I said, with our state family planning clinics that offer all contraceptive methods, but due to the high upfront cost of IUDs and implants, had only been able to do that on a really limited basis to begin with.
So was there anything in tandem with the birth control methods themselves? Was there sort of any education and outreach efforts alongside that?
Yeah. So when we first started out, our educational and outreach efforts were really focused around providers, making sure that they were trained both in insertion techniques, but how to counsel and talk to clients about these methods and cover all of the options for birth control in the most effective way. And then as we got into the program and we started seeing, you know, a lot of success just with word of mouth among our clients, once somebody got an IUD, she would tell their friends, her sisters, her mothers, and we would see them coming into the clinics interested as well. But one of the things we heard from both the clients that we serve as well as the providers that work in our clinics was there was a bigger education and outreach piece missing, that people didn't know how to have conversations about sexual health and birth control, whether it was with their partners or their family or their providers. And so we worked a couple years into this overall effort to create the BeforePlay.org campaign, which is a public education effort aimed at getting reliable information out to young people in Colorado about birth control, safe sex, STDs, planning for pregnancy, in a way that was really relatable and accessible to them. So the campaign takes kind of an edgy and funny look at what can be kind of uncomfortable conversations to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to explore that in just a little bit. But first, I'm curious why in this particular effort in Colorado, there seemed to be an emphasis on IUDs and implants versus other methods, like maybe the pill.
Right. So we had seen, you know, pill use high among all of our family planning clients for years, and that's those options with Depo, with the pill, the patch, the ring, have all been more accessible because the upfront cost is lower. Over time, it can add up when you're talking about buying a monthly pack of pills or the ring every 3 months. And with IUDs, you're talking about, and implants, you're talking about anywhere from a $300 to a $900 upfront expense to cover that method. And so at our clinics, we provide services on a sliding fee scale that slides to zero. Most of the clients that we serve don't pay anything for their contraceptive method. And for our clinics, they have to subsidize that cost. And to cover something $900 up front versus maybe a $10 or a $20 pack of pills is a big financial burden, and certainly a big financial burden to the clients that have to pay. And this funding allowed us to offer those methods at the same the same ability as other methods like pills and Depo and things like that. And what we saw is when that cost barrier was reduced, many, many more people chose those methods than had before when cost was more of an issue.
So was this readily accepted by the teenagers in Colorado and their parents, or was there some controversy around it?
You know, we've had a lot of public support throughout this campaign. Our clinics across the state have been around in operation, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 to 30 to 40 years, and have really established themselves within their communities and have a lot of support. And I think that was a great way to start rolling out this program, was through those existing clinics that had wide acceptance among their communities and at the state level. And we really didn't see a whole lot of pushback from anyone in the state around this effort.
And you saw a 40% decline in teen pregnancies. Were you surprised by how big of a drop there was?
We were. When we first started out with this project, I think everybody expected to see good results. But the rate at which we saw state-level shifts happening, I think, surprised all of us in a very, very good way.
Do you credit it all to this program, or were there other factors involving that decrease?
Well, you look at data nationwide and you see teen pregnancy rates dropping across the country. And so certainly it's a trend that's been going on, and there's multiple factors playing into that. You're seeing kids delay the initiation of sex till later ages, different sex education programs out there supporting it. But certainly we've been able to kind of tease out through looking at the data that we can attribute about 75% of the drop here in Colorado specifically to this increase in access to long-acting reversible contraceptives.
Now, a 40% drop, help us understand in a greater context in the state of Colorado, what does that mean for the economic impact?
It's huge. We're currently working with our state Medicaid office to try and come up with some estimates in terms of actual dollar amounts of what was saved, but we know that teen and unintended pregnancies have huge health, social, and economic impacts, both to the individuals experiencing them as well as the greater community. And so, you know, we see teen mothers have a lower likelihood of graduating from high school or going to college. We see babies that are born as a result of unintended pregnancies are more likely to be born preterm before they're really ready, that there's a higher incidence of low birth weight and other kind of negative health outcomes along the way. And so there's costs associated with all of those things that are being saved when we talk about averting unintended pregnancy and lowering the teen birth rate.
And now this program of supplying birth control to teenagers in Colorado was made possible by an anonymous donor. Do you know what motivated the donation in the first place?
I think they were really looking to see whether an investment at the state level in specifically in promoting use of long-acting reversible contraceptives could have a difference on these health outcomes and kind of long-term impact on this issue. And they, like us, I think, expected to see good things, but I'm not sure anybody expected quite the magnitude. And it's been really wonderful to hear the response from other states and other programs wanting to know exactly kind of the nitty-gritty of how we did things and trying to work in their way to replicate the same efforts to see if they can indeed have the same impact.
Now, I don't know what you know about this anonymous donor, but do you know enough to say whether or not this individual or this group is someone from Colorado, or would they say, oh, that was successful in Colorado, I'm going to donate now to the state of Iowa, I don't know, and take this nationwide?
I can't say their intent moving into the future, but they are not here in Colorado. I can say that.
Interesting. Well, we're talking with Greta Klingler. She is Family Planning Supervisor at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. She's part of a project to prevent teen pregnancy in Colorado.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about how this works? Is this something you think Wisconsin should try to replicate? We continue our conversation about teen pregnancy prevention. Greta Klingler from Colorado's Public Health Department is with us now talking about a program in her state that saw a 40% decline in teen birth rate over a four-year span.
You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Do you think teens should have more access to birth control devices? Why or why not? What do you think is important when it comes to preventing teen pregnancy? Let us know at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Greta, earlier you referenced a program in Colorado called Before Play. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
BeforePlay.org is a statewide education and outreach campaign aimed at normalizing the conversation around sexual health and birth control here in the state. And I think what's unique about the campaign is it takes a very different spin than a lot of teen pregnancy prevention campaigns and other messages that we see out there. We really want it to be positive and focused on providing people with the information and the tools to make the choices that are right for them. And for some, it may be choosing to be a parent, but we also want to make sure that all the information is out there and it's accurate and reliable. And we've gotten great response from the young people in Colorado about the campaign, going to the website. And I think one of the great things is we have an outreach team across the state that goes to community events and schools and universities talking about this and engaging people in the conversation and hearing what they need and what their concerns are. And then the campaign works to respond to that and provide them with the tools that they need to make healthy choices and to do what makes the most sense for them.
And as you mentioned, a part of that is to normalize the conversation around sexual health and to foster open dialogue about it. So how do you go about doing that, and how early should parents start?
You know, I think one, it's never too early to be open about conversations about your body and sexuality, and there's a number of great resources out there, I think, for parents on how to start those conversations early and have them, you know, what's appropriate at what ages. Our focus is definitely on kind of the older young people, if you will, from ages 18 to 29 and the tools they need. And on the BeforePlay.org website, there's a great section of conversation starters under the Get Talking heading that helps people look at all different types of kind of categories and topics that they might want to talk about related to sexual health, sexuality, contraception, and gives them different options of how to start that conversation, be it with their partner, with their friends, with a healthcare provider, with their family. And we've heard great things from young people as well as parents that it's been very helpful to them to broach topics that they may not have known how to bring up and that may be uncomfortable. And again, sometimes taking a little bit of a humorous take on it, recognizing that it makes it a little bit easier when you can laugh about it, but still have very serious, informed discussions.
Let's take a call from Jennifer in Milwaukee. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. So I was just wanting to say that I think this is an amazing program that you guys are offering, and I wish that they had offered something like that when I was growing up. You know, I'm 28 now, and I have a child now, and, you know, I'm married and whatever, but as I was growing up, I just wish that someone had told me that there was even that kind of an option out there. The only thing that was ever offered to me was the pill, and I sporadically took it and didn't know that there was anything else out there. And I went to college. I'm educated. I'm from, you know, a decent family that should have had those kinds of things talked about, and no one ever said anything. And I didn't even know it existed until I was, you know, a grown woman. And I think that this is so important for teenagers and for anyone, really.
Thanks, Jennifer. Do you have any thoughts on that, Greta?
I do. I think Jennifer brings up a really good point. One, the pill is kind of our default birth control here in this country. Just, it's been around a long time. It's been fairly easily accessible. And there have been a lot of concerns. You know, people from back in the 70s might remember some of the scares with the Dalcon Shield, and then that has kind of brought myths to whether IUDs were safe. And in fact, they are extremely safe. They're extremely effective. And really, they're safe and good choices for almost all women. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as the Association of Pediatricians, have all come out saying that IUDs and implants are great methods for young women, regardless of age, regardless of whether they've been pregnant before. And I think getting that message out, both to providers and the public, is really important. And as more people choose to use these methods, more and more people know about them and know to ask their provider about whether it would be a good option for them. So I think that's a great point. And that idea also that Jennifer said, you know, a lot of people, they take the pill and it's so easy to forget one day. And that one day can then lead to very serious consequences. And so having a method that once you get it inserted, you can forget about, and you don't have to remember something on a daily basis. And in fact, you have to take very conscious steps to have it removed and reversed, is a great option for a lot of young women, as well as women, you know, into their 30s and 40s who want to be able to control that reproductive cycle.
Thanks again for that call, Jennifer. Adam in New London is with us now. Hi, Adam.
Hello. I just had a real quick question. I was wondering if you had seen any adverse effects of this. You're talking about, you know, supplying it to the more of the teenage group, and was wondering if you've seen an increase in, like, STDs or anything like that.
That's a really good question, and it's one we get asked quite a bit. And we actually have not seen any significant change in the STD rates in any of the people we serve. And while a lot of the focus has been on teens, our clinics serve men and women both of all ages who are looking to control their reproduction and get educated and get screened and things like that. So we haven't seen any adverse effects there as a result of this.
Well, it does make you wonder if IUDs and implants are the emphasis of this program versus the pill, whether there's an increased amount of unprotected sex happening.
Again, we haven't seen, the data that we have doesn't show that there's been an increase in that. We haven't seen an increase in sexual activity among young people, nor have we seen increases in any of the indicators we would expect with an increase in unprotected sex. So again, STD rates haven't significantly changed. We've seen the teen birth rate go down. We're still waiting on the unintended pregnancy data to come back. So it's a little too early to tell on that just because there's a lag in when we get the data for that. But we anticipate seeing positive results there as well.
And what's next for this program? Now that you've seen this 40% decrease in teen pregnancies, what more is there to do?
I think, you know, we continue, we've seen the success of making sure that access to these methods is there, and we remain committed to ensuring that access for all women of Colorado who would like to access these methods. So looking at how we can continue the efforts and continue to see the positive health impacts from that is what we're really looking at. And with the passage of the Affordable Care Act and the Women's Health Preventive Service coverage that includes contraception, and here in Colorado, we've been fortunate to expand Medicaid that has a great contraceptive benefit as well. You know, we're looking at how to maximize those resources and make sure people have coverage that they're eligible for, and then making sure that that's utilized to get them the services that they want.
And in our last minute here, in the absence of a major donation to other states, what could other states learn from what you guys have done over in Colorado?
I think one, you know, highlighting the fact that removing the cost barriers is a big piece of that. And with as I mentioned, the passage of the Affordable Care Act, there's a lot of opportunity there to remove those cost barriers that have been there historically. And then realizing that once it's offered, people do choose this as a method, and it's well accepted. The outcome is extremely positive, and people are very happy and very satisfied with these methods.
Well, Greta, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Greta Klingler. She's a family planning supervisor at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, talking about the state's efforts to combat teen pregnancy.